Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at IKEA-USA.com/circular. Visit IKEA-USA.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
Welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mitz. Today, we are continuing our opponent preview series, even though, as we've kind of talked about in the countdown articles, that the countdown might end up getting extended and it may not actually be the correct number of days. We are going to continue just as if Kansas is going to be able to replace their opponent in New Hampshire on the schedule and get started on time. So we are at the point now where the opponent that we are previewing is the Kansas State Wildcats. To help me do that, I think it's the first time that I've actually had a Kansas State guest back on the podcast. That is Ryan Gilbert. He is from the 10 of 12 podcast, which covers all of the Big 12. But, him being a K-State guy makes it a little easier to go ahead and bring him on here. Ryan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. It's been a while. It's good to talk to you again.
Yeah, it definitely has been a while. I think the last time we were talking was we were just ramping up for the Big 12 tournament for basketball, which unfortunately didn't actually happen. So, obviously, here we're here to talk about football today. Talking about Kansas State specifically before we talk about the K-State KU game that's coming up. But Kansas State, I think for all intents and purposes, had a really good year last year in the first year of a brand new coach, Chris Klieman, coming in. He was able to, as far as I could tell from the outside, kind of bring the system that he was known for, take advantage of the really good offensive and defensive lines that Bill Snyder was really good at recruiting, and really use that as, establishing that base for his system and how he wants to run things. Obviously, I think it was a good example of someone using what was there and kind of catering your system to that, but based off of what you know of Chris Klieman and his coaching style and what he's kind of talked about, do you think that that was really truly his system, or are we going to see changes in this Kansas State team, as he's able to bring in more of his own recruits and kind of really establish what he wants to do?
I think it's a mixture of a little bit of both of what you just said. That residue from the Bill Snyder teams are going to be there here for a few years to come, but he came in last year and not just with, the schematics and the playbook and stuff like that, but, just with recruits, we're able to get so much more coverage on these kids. A lot more information is being relayed. Stuff is not as hidden as it was with Bill Snyder. So he's a player's coach. He's certainly more relatable for the young guys. And you can kind of tell with Bill Snyder's last year or two, those kids were getting burnout. There was no motivation. You kind of saw the nail in the coffin when they played Iowa State in his last game as a Wildcat, as a head coach. So, it was a good change. Obviously, we've seen that last year going 8-4 in the regular season. It was a great hire. But to answer that question, I think it's a little bit of both. You've got that same style from Bill Snyder, but obviously Chris Klieman has kind of came in and critiqued it a little bit, but it's still Kansas State football. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's small ball. They're still going to do what they do. Special teams is still going to be a strong spot of that team. So overall, I think it's a little bit of both.
Yeah, and I will say that I think that that's kind of, that it's one of those things. It worked out perfect because I think there was a lot of people that criticized the hire initially because it was, grabbing a guy from a lower level and hoping that he could kind of bring what he does up there and make it successful. And, there's obviously the questions about whether FCS style football can be successful in the Power Five, especially. But I think what a lot of people fail to realize, myself included, is that, Bill Snyder was essentially playing FCS football, for a large portion of the time he was there, where you have really strong lines, a really good run game. You really kind of, play that small ball dominating style where the lines are your foundation. And a lot of times in the Power Five, you know, we're seeing they're really trying to spread it out. They're really trying to, you know, get the huge wide receivers that can do things and really fling it all over the field. And Kansas State, you know, like the one thing they say is that if you can't compete doing the exact same thing as the big guys, you have to find something else that you can do really well and make it difficult. So that's why like the triple option coaches are kind of successful and are sought after a lot of times with coaching changes, because it's something so completely different than what everyone else is doing that a lot of times, you know, it catches them off guard or at least gives you a chance to stay competitive. You know, Kansas State has done that for a really long time and people have kind of just taken it for granted because the system itself works as long as you get the foundational recruits on the offensive and defensive lines that you need to, you know, and then kind of fill in the rest. And where Bill Snyder's really had the problem was filling in the rest with skill players that were good enough to take advantage of those advantages they get from the line. And so what I think what we've seen is that Chris Klieman was a perfect fit because that's the same style that he used down in the FCS level that was extremely successful when he was able to get better recruits. Now he's got an even better set of recruits than he had previously doing the same kind of system. It was a lot of kind of just, you know, adding on those additional things, but he's also a young enough coach that I think he's bringing new ideas and new tweaks to how that can actually work. So it's not as stale. And I think that's what a lot of people, myself included, kind of overlooked in terms of, you know, that expectation of how good Kansas State was going to be last year. I guess the one question about that though is, you know, how much of that was him able to hit the ground running and kind of just taking advantage of what was already there? Like, does that reset expectations maybe to a level that you know, may not be realistic for what's going to happen in the second year? Like, my biggest concern if I'm a K-State fan is that most of the fan base is going to expect, well, they were 8-4 last year in his first year. Now maybe they should be 9-3 or 10-2 and, you know, really kind of compete for the top of the Big 12 conference. Is that a worry that there's going to be those kind of expectations, or do you think that there should be those types of expectations?
I think it's kind of a problem or an issue that you go 8-4. You know, like you're saying here, the expectations are pretty high now this year after that. I don't think they should be that high. With that being said, I think K-State's always a team that goes out and exceeds expectations just a little bit. If you look at their raw numbers as far as the preseason coaches poll go in the Big 12 versus their, you know, finish, they're statistically better than that. But overall, last year, no one in Manhattan thought they would win 7 games. People would just be happy if they could make a bowl game and escape the season with 6 wins. You know, the only team in the country to beat any of the 4 teams that were in the playoff, of course, that being Oklahoma. I mean, you have some ugly games in there, though. You Stillwater, Oklahoma State, that was not a good game for that team at all. They get blown out by Baylor at home. You know, they beat TCU in Manhattan when they have 100 less yards than the Horned Frogs. So, I mean, overall, I mean, I'm a K-State fan. I cover them. I don't think they were that good last year. And I think that this year it won't be too much better. I don't think Skylar Thompson's the best quarterback in the world. He's really got to learn to, when he's under pressure, you know, not panic and not just rush out of the pocket and throw it away on third down, make something happen. But, you know, overall, I don't think that Skylar Thompson made the steps last year as a junior to really prepare himself for a senior season that's something amazing that we're seeing in, like, a Big 12 quarterback. You know, last year, well, it was supposed to be the year he made the jump, and he just didn't.
Yeah, so that was kind of, I guess, going to be my next question, is because obviously what we were just talking about is that the skill positions are super important to be competitive with the top of the conference. And if that's the expectation, they're jumping up to the top of the conference. I'm going to admit, not being a Kansas State guy, I haven't necessarily followed them as closely as I would need to in order to actually know the answer to this. But I think you've kind of alluded to the answer there at the beginning, is that, you know, the big concern would be, do they have enough at the skill level positions, especially the quarterback, because we all know how important quarterback is, especially in the Big 12, to be competitive with the top of the conference? Or is something like 8-4 still kind of their ceiling because of who they have? And to kind of talk about that, you know, the skill level positions, like, who are the big pieces that they ended up missing or losing in this offseason? And who do they have returning, and then people that are new that would either make you think that they could stay back up at that 8-4 range, or that they could potentially drop down this next season?
You know, they do return a lot. You know, Wyatt Hubert's something on the defensive end that you've got to be scared of if you're a running back or a quarterback. You know, Malik Knowles was kind of banged up, probably our best wide receiver. If he can be healthy, I think he's going to make a big step forward. But that's obviously an if, because he simply was just banged up. But they made it pretty clear when he was healthy that they wanted to get him, you know, involved a lot. You know, they lose some running backs. Joshua Youngblood is someone around Manhattan who fans are very, very excited for. I don't know if I see it. I mean, he's kind of like a subpar version of Tyler Lockett or Tremaine Thompson. Any K-State fans know Brandon Banks. I think he's got some speed and quickness, but he's just not big enough, in my opinion. But overall, you know, they lose some. They ended the draft streak after however many years it was. But overall, you know, the pieces are there to, you know, really build upon that season. But this is just, you know, my personal opinion here. I think the Big 12 was a little overrated last year. You know, we're talking about the quarterback situation, Skylar Thompson. I think Sam Ellinger and Texas in general, just overrated. You know, Iowa State, Brock Purdy, overrated. You know, Baylor, I think they're overrated, but they just got kind of lucky with their wins last year. Charlie Brewer's not a, you know, QB1 in the Big 12. Overall, I think the league was kind of down, and the biggest beneficiary of that was Kansas State. So 8-4, you know, certainly not bad for year one, but I think it gives you kind of a false hope for year two. I'm a little pessimistic, but that's just me. Certainly hope I'm wrong on that, but the point we're making earlier, I think it's false hope.
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, we could have a debate about which of those teams were actually overrated. Like Baylor, I don't know if they were necessarily overrated. I thought they had a phenomenal coach in Matt Rhule, They're not going to have this year. So if they take a big step back this year, I don't think it's because they're overrated. They were overrated last year. I think it's because they lost the main key to their success, which was the head coach.
Yeah.
You know, and COVID probably isn't helping. Like, there's a bunch of additional things that they kind of have to overcome. But I mean, I will agree. Like, I think Texas was overrated last year. They should have lost a lot of games that they ended up winning. Actually, against Kansas and what?
Said, when are they not overrated? Come on.
Well, right, exactly. But I mean, you know, Texas honestly should have lost to both Kansas State and Kansas last year, and they didn't. And so, like, yeah. But I mean, you know, that really kind of, I guess, you know, if you're talking about guys that are coming back, because Skylar Thompson, you were talking about, you know, as a quarterback, probably hasn't done what he needs to set himself up this year, in his senior season to be super successful. But, you know, looking at the state of quarterbacks in the Big 12, like Sam Ellinger, I think, is the only guy that you can be super comfortable in terms of returning. And, you know, there's always the questions about how well he's able to utilize the talent and what kind of position Tom Herman is going to put him in to be successful. And so, like, if he's the only for sure top tier talent quarterback in the Big 12, you know, like, you could say that you think Spencer Rattler is going to be, but I think that's going to be a whole lot more about the system. So, like, Spencer Rattler and Sam Ellinger are the only two quarterbacks, I think, that right now I'm comfortable saying are going to have fairly good years. You know, and that might be, like, with Ellinger being held back, and then, you know, he might even be held back so that he doesn't have a good year by what else is going on around him at Texas. But like, Spencer Rattler is the only surefire guy that's going to have a really great year at quarterback. And that has to do with the system, I think, just as much, if not more, than what kind of, you know, actual performance he can put on based upon his talent. But looking around the rest of the Big 12, like, what other quarterbacks do you really feel comfortable with? And where would you slot Skylar Thompson in compared to all the rest of them?
I think you nailed it on the head there. I mean, there's not many that I am comfortable with. Obviously, with Oklahoma, you're comfortable with just the system. With Skylar, I'd probably stick him right there in the middle, at, you know, mid-tier 4, 5, 6 spot in the Big 12. I think Jarrett Daigie at West Virginia, I think he's going to really break out and shock a lot of people. Hot take alert, whatever you want to say with that. But I think West Virginia is going to be a lot better than people are giving them some credit for right now. I mean, Texas Tech's quarterback situation was just a disaster last year, you know. Their 15th-string quarterback, it felt like, was, you know, playing their games. And, you know, overall, I think Thompson's going to be right there in the middle. I think there's the expectation that he's going to be a top-tier quarterback in the Big 12. Personally, I don't think that's going to happen. Obviously, time will tell, and we'll see if we even have football. Hopefully, we do. Hopefully, we have some fans. But time will tell. I think Skylar's going to be right there in the middle, though.
Yeah. So in terms of other players on the offense, let's stick with the offense for right now. In terms of players that they've lost, and then who do you have coming in to actually replace them? Can you kind of tell me, like, from what I can tell, it doesn't look like they've lost very much in terms of running backs or wide receivers or anything like that. And the lines are going to be super, super solid like they were last year. So, like, where is the main losses that you're seeing coming from the offensive side? Or is it really just that, you know, maybe people are expecting a step up in the guys that are returning that isn't necessarily going to be there?
You know, they lose a decent amount from last year. I think the biggest, there wasn't really one player that was like, this guy is someone who you're really hurting to lose. Obviously, like, I know it's probably weird to hear, but Devin Ankle, our punter, was a very solid punter. Dalton Schoen was one of our better wide receivers, but he was a walk-on, I believe, in the beginning of his career. And, you know, people, they're getting their chances in the NFL. You know, Jordan Brown, a running back, Trey Deshone, James Gilbert, you know, the running backs are definitely depleted, but overall, I'm not as well versed in the recruiting world as I should be, so I'll just, I'll say that I don't necessarily know who's going to be, the best players.
That's all right. We have that in common.
Yeah, definitely. But I know Harry Trotter, as far as the running backs go, it was kind of a three-headed monster last year. He'll sort of take over that, and you would hope he can be at least a first and second down running back for Kansas State. Overall, though, you lose a decent amount, but you look at it, take a step back. Okay, no one got drafted from this class, right? So you lose some, but it's like, hey, well, hey, there wasn't an NFL caliber player, at least yet, that they lost. So I think they bring back a lot, like we mentioned here earlier. You know, Wyatt Hubert is definitely someone you've got to look out for. He's going to make a big step up, in my opinion. You've got Malik Knowles. I think Skylar Thompson's got to do something. Do I think he will? No, but overall, I think they'll make an improvement from last year, even though I don't know if they'll have the same record. The overall quality of play, the consistency is kind of the biggest key for K-State. You know, you beat Oklahoma and then you lose to West Virginia at home. Like what in the world was that? So I think they're going to probably win the games they're supposed to win. And then the games that you're not, going up against the Oklahoma State, I don't think at all. I mean, that's a team with a lot of offensive weapons. So overall, I think they're going to win the games they need to win and then kind of just cruise from there. So maybe get a win over Texas or Oklahoma State, something like that. But I think they'll make a bowl game. And for me, I'd be happy with that.
Yeah. All right. So I do want to kind of switch over to the defense and kind of talk about what's going on there. But before we do that, I need to throw it to a quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk podcast. And we're back. So switching over to the defense, I think this probably is one of the bigger question marks, because like you said, it didn't seem like they were losing a lot of the production that they had, or a lot of the super top tier talent that they might have had on the offensive side. But the defense, I thought, even if everyone's coming back on the defense, that defense seemed to really go up and down last year quite a bit. Because like teams like Oklahoma State that were very volatile and struggled, and even Baylor that had problems on the defense, or I'm sorry, on the offense at times, scored a whole bunch against this defense. Obviously Oklahoma scored quite a bit, but they were able to win that game. Like they just seemed to be all over the place. There was a lot more high scoring games than I think I really expected, especially where they would start out really strong in the game and then give up a lot of points kind of on the back end. So is there concern about this defensive side of the ball, whether they can consistently maintain that performance throughout an entire game? Are you expecting guys to take a huge step up coming into this year, or are you worried about the impacts of COVID and how that might affect the ability of this development that you would normally expect from one year to the next?
I think with COVID, we're going to see, and I don't know who's doing their work, but we're going to see who's putting in the work in the offseason, and the ones who just kind of decided to say, hey, I'm quarantined, I'm not going to do anything. But
even with that, like a lot of defensive improvement comes from knowing where you're supposed to be in the scheme, like knowing that communication with other people around you to make sure you don't leave someone wide open, like not having the offseason to really work on that kind of stuff. How much worry is there that is going to be the issue? Like in the spring, there's not that improvement, not because guys aren't improving their body or improving their fitness or getting stronger or things like that, but because they haven't had the ability to gel and make that, get that ability to work together the way that they need to to actually improve the defense? Because it seemed like there was a lot of breakdowns last year where they would play really well and then stuff would break down and the opposing offense would adjust and start attacking them a different way. And both, you know, the combination of the staff and the players couldn't recognize that quickly enough to be able to stop them from taking advantage of it over and over and over again. So I guess that's really where my question is, like, how worried are you that you're not going to see that improvement that you would normally expect because of everything that's happened in the offseason? And does that bode, you know, poorly for the opportunity for this team to take that next step forward?
You know, I think it's sort of a level playing field for teams who have a returning head coach of at least a year. So obviously, you know, it's tough for any school like that, but you've got Chris Klieman, who's already been there for a year. So I think that the system, it's not a brand new system. I think this really, really hurts a school like Baylor. You know, I just can't imagine trying to come in and learn a new system and all the whole nine yards, and you can't even be in person for any of it. So I think it affects a team like Baylor a lot more than Kansas State. Certainly it doesn't help, but you look around the whole country, you know, no one's allowed to do anything. So I obviously it sucks, but I think it's a level playing field overall with the whole COVID thing. A team like Baylor certainly has had a setback just in regards of that, but we're talking about the defense as a whole. Certainly some moments last year where I was, you know, frustrated to say the least with that defense, but I think that the defense was better than the offense. They're losing, you know, a few key players. Like we said, Trey DeShone, he just got married. What's this dude's name? I'm absolutely blanking. Wow. You have to edit this out. I'm like getting dementia over here. Who's our safety? Boy, I cannot believe I don't remember this. I had a class with him. But overall, the defense is what kept them in the game a lot of the time. And obviously, each game is different. But I think that the defense is what kept them some of those games competitive. Overall, they did their part. They did their share. A.J. Parker is one of the notable defensive players, a cornerback for K-State. I think he'll have to make a step up. Like we talked about, Light Hubert, I think I've said it here, he's going to make a huge step forward, at least here, in my opinion. I think that there's a lot of optimism. I think regarding the defense, we talked earlier, the attitude, the mindset, the passion for the game wasn't really there with Bill Snyder. It was just lost. There wasn't much motivation. Now with Chris Klieman, you know, you see these guys, they're having fun on the sidelines. They're into it. They're college athletes. They're doing what they want to do. I think they're a little more excited to go out and boom, make that big play, make that big tackle. I don't know if that passion and energy was there with Bill Snyder. So I think they're kind of getting that back now. And I think the whole Klieman system only helps that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's one of those things that's really hard to overcome any of your issues if you just don't have that, especially that passion from the top. Which I think has definitely hurt Kansas, you know, in the past with like Charlie Weiss. No matter how much he said that he, you know, really, really enjoyed what he was doing, is really committed, you could just tell the way that he carried himself that he was there for a paycheck. He was there to, you know, for the status symbol and not necessarily to put in the work. And it's understandable for a guy like Bill Snyder when he gets to the very end of his career. I mean, it was pretty clear he was trying to just hang on long enough that he could pass it off to his son and allow his son to take over. Yeah. And obviously that, you know, it tanked much too quickly for him to be able to actually do that. And so, you know, it was definitely good for them to kind of get the new blood in there. So, all right. So looking at what Kansas State has, because I'm trying to look at their, you know, like look at their schedule last year. I think there was more pleasant surprises than there was bad surprises. Like West Virginia was probably the only game that honestly they were better than that team and they lost it. You know, and you could maybe potentially make the same argument with the bowl game against Navy. But to be honest, I think they kind of were fortunate in that matchup anyway. It could have been a whole lot worse for them in terms of the way that all the bids went. You know, but like the game against the game against Iowa State, I think that was a little surprising. You know, the win they had against Oklahoma was obviously super surprising, you know, and then, I mean, I'm having a hard time looking at any other ones that were really positive surprises other than maybe Mississippi State, just given what we knew at the time. There was a lot of questions about whether they were going to be able to win that game, and that really kind of set them up for the rest of the year. But Were there any other games that were either really big positive surprises or negative surprises, and you know, that kind of really changed your opinion of how that team was going to be, or maybe could change the opinion about what you think this team should be moving forward?
Anyone that knows me, I was very pessimistic. It was Oklahoma State on the road in Stillwater, and I was there. I was really excited because that was coming off the Mississippi State win, like you mentioned. Obviously, Mississippi State wasn't that good last year, right? But that's an SEC opponent on the road, first-year head coach. I mean, no one thought we were going to win that game, and we do. So that created a lot of false hope for this team. So I was really excited. And then we go and crap the bed in Stillwater. And I was like, you know what? Bad games happen. We come back to Manhattan. We get, you know, just throttled by Baylor. So overall, the season was great. You know, we went 8-4. It's how can you not be ecstatic about that? But overall, I was so down in the dumps. And I was, you know, fully convinced that Kansas State just wasn't a good team. So you know, that Oklahoma State and Baylor game, those really left a bad memory on the season for me. Obviously, you have the great wins in there. You could have beat Texas, like we mentioned here. You know, just was a field goal away, right? And certainly the Navy game. I think Navy outcoached us. I mean, you go back to the final game-winning play that Navy had. That was just a trick play that they pulled out of their sleeves, and K-State wasn't prepared for it. So overall, you know, a good season, but the games, I was not even at the Oklahoma game. I was doing some board work at the radio station, so I wasn't even in Bill Snyder Family Stadium when they beat Oklahoma. So that kind of sucks. So I just don't have much of a memory of it. So I'm kind of a pessimistic, you know, person to say these things, but overall, it didn't really feel like Kansas State was 8-4. It felt like a 6-6 season because of the losses to West Virginia and stuff like that. So overall, certainly a great season, but just for me personally, it didn't feel like they were that good.
So that'll segue us perfectly into the next section, which would be kind of talking about the schedule coming up this year and looking ahead. But before we do that, I need to throw it to one last quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast. And we're back. Okay, so looking ahead to this next season, I want to talk about the schedule in general first and then kind of drill down into the Kansas game. Obviously, there's a little bit of uncertainty up in the air because you know, we've already seen some cancellations from some of the FCS opponents. I imagine there's going to be quite a bit more. There's some talk about some radical changes, as you know, the Big Ten has already said, and the Pac-12 have already said that they are not going to have any non-conference opponents. That doesn't affect Kansas State specifically, because the ACC, the SEC, and the Big 12 are all currently still trying to play full 12-game schedules. You know, the question becomes, though, like, you know, one, if they change the non-conference schedule so that Kansas State is not able to get a full 3 games in the non-conference, how worried are you about how that affects potentially the way that they could go through Big 12 play?
You know, you've got a game versus Vanderbilt, and if they're going to go to, like, I know this morning there was some news broke that they're going to try to do some, you know, just one non-con game. And if that's the case, they'd be playing Vanderbilt. That's a big game for them. Certainly any K-State fan you ask, that was kind of the moment, the game where people were saying, okay, Bill Snyder's career is done. You know, we went out to, what was it, Nashville or wherever they are in Tennessee, right? That was just an ugly game. There was no effort from the team at all. And K-State fans want their revenge, quite honestly, from that game a few years ago. So certainly that's a game you've got to watch out for. We've talked about this, you know, I think the Texas game in Manhattan, just because it's Texas, is a big game. But overall, I mean, the Big 12, the Big 12. And what I love about it, and it could be different this year. Who knows what's going to happen? But, you know, it's a true round robin. You know, you play everyone once in 9 games, and it's great. And same thing with basketball. I just absolutely love the model. But overall, I mean, I've got the schedule here on my computer. Nothing really sticks out really too much. I mean, obviously, you're looking at a team last year like Baylor, who got Texas and Oklahoma, I believe, both in Waco. I mean, now this year you've got, I'd say, the two best teams. You've got Oklahoma State in Manhattan, and you've got Oklahoma in Norman. So, you know, it's the Big 12. I think it all evens itself out. I don't know if there's anything really huge that is kind of sticking out to my eyes right now. But overall, I think if you can get to play that Vanderbilt game, I think you're happy. I don't think there's any way. We're recording this here on the Friday, and you're posting on Sunday, right? I mean, we're playing Buffalo and North Dakota. I just don't see that happening. I don't see how the Big Ten and all these other conferences can play a limited schedule and then have the other ones just play a full schedule. I just don't see it how it's happening. I respect the Big 12 for waiting and taking their time and weighing in the options, but overall, I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, I'm kind of on the same, you know, the same path there as well. I think it's very, very likely that we're going to see, you know, basically the only, it's going to be like a 10-game schedule is what I'm anticipating at this point, which means like Kansas is going to get to keep their Boston College game, K-State is going to get to keep their Vanderbilt game, which I think is actually going to hurt those two squads, because what happened last year, like the expectation for both of these teams was that they were going to be able to ramp up, and obviously Kansas is going to have their Baylor game rescheduled if that's the way it happens, because there's no way that Baylor is going to happen in week two as currently scheduled, you know, and then they're going to push everything back. I think what's most likely going to happen is that Baylor and Kansas will get pushed back to what would normally be week three at this point, which means that Kansas is going to open with a Big 12 game most likely, but that's a completely different conversation to have later. Like you would think that like the game against Buffalo, the game against North Dakota would be good games for Kansas State to kind of ramp up, to shake the rust off, to kind of get what they're doing. Then you have a big challenge against Vanderbilt before you get into the Big 12 schedule. And that was kind of the way it ramped up last year too. They passed the, you know, they passed the test against Mississippi State, and that really set them up really well for the Big 12. Not having that ramp up means that you're going to be ironing out the kinks against your marquee non-conference opponent and, you know, that first game in the Big 12 against West Virginia, which was a game that coming into the year, I think you could have, if the schedule was played as it was intended, you could have envisioned Kansas State winning that game against West Virginia because they've gotten everything ironed out and the defense could potentially carry them. There's enough unknown about West Virginia this year that it was at least reasonable to say that that was a 50-50 even on the road against West Virginia. I don't know that that's the case anymore. If everybody's kind of shaking off the rust, it's going to really help the home teams a whole lot more. You know, it's going to help the teams that have that consistency, which, you know, Kansas State and West Virginia are kind of both on the same even path there. You know, but I do think that, you know, it makes it a little bit more difficult. Now, going through the rest of the schedule, I think by the time we get to, you know, the Kansas game or the TCU game, like we're going to, you know, it's going to be about the same regardless of where it would have been. Like the only thing that's going to affect you at that point is if someone gets a bunch of COVID and has to, you know, lose a whole bunch of players and, you know, like that could potentially be a problem. But going through the rest of the schedule, assuming that we play the schedule as it's currently constituted, you know, with that caveat that we essentially lop off the first 2 weeks, you know, I think it's more difficult for Kansas State to be one of the better teams in the Big 12 just because they don't have that ramp up. But, you know, kind of looking at the way the schedule is set up too, I don't know that you would expect them to beat Oklahoma or Oklahoma State anyway. You know, no matter where they are in the schedule. So the fact that you have teams like Texas, who is going to be breaking in new offensive and defensive coordinators, like West Virginia, who, you know, is going to be breaking in a brand new, well, not bringing in a brand new quarterback, but, you know, developing one who had some success last year, but was still developing and doesn't have the offseason. Like, it definitely helps Kansas State that those sort of 50-50 games or games where they could benefit are early in the schedule, as opposed to being late in the schedule. And then the games that they're most likely going to lose, ones like Oklahoma State and Oklahoma, are at the end of the schedule when you wouldn't really expect them, you know, to be able to benefit from this in any way anyway. So, you know, I think it does really kind of help them there. But what do you think about the order of the games? Are there any games that you kind of wish were early in the schedule as opposed to late in the schedule or vice versa?
I mean, quite honestly, I think you make a good point. You've got Oklahoma State there at the very end. Certainly Baylor, I think, is going to take a step back, but they're still a good team. That's the last game of the season. I mean, you're kind of getting your warm-up, get your bugs out of the system, whatever, like we're talking about here, out of the way. I know West Virginia is not the best team, but then you've got Texas. I mean, hopefully we could see the way Texas can lose, but I think it did work out for K-State. I know certainly in years past they've been unhappy, but this year I think it's really a good schedule. And you talked about the lack of Buffalo and North Dakota. If those games get canceled, that is certainly something that doesn't help Kansas State, but you look around the Big 12, it should be a level playing field. I know the KU situation might be a little different, but overall, I know it is kind of tough to go snap your fingers and boom, you're playing a team like Vanderbilt for your first game, but, you know, overall, if you're a good team, you're going to win those games. You know, good teams find ways to win games. So obviously it hurts to not have those kind of, you know, exhibition games, whatever you want to call them. But I think more or less it's a pretty favorable, you know, schedule for Kansas State. Obviously you'd want Texas a little later to get those, you know, get those bugs out of the way, but the jitters out of the way, but you're going to have to play everyone at least once. So I think it's a pretty favorable schedule. I really do.
All right. So turning to the Kansas game specifically, because obviously that's what most of my listeners will really care about. You know, Kansas State walloped Kansas last year. And I think a lot of it had to do with, you know, Kansas one getting dominated, by the middle of that defense. The lines weren't really kind of up to snuff to handle what's going on there. Brent Dearman hadn't been able to really fully implement his system. He was kind of just working with what he had and trying to bring his concepts in. Is there any concern based off what you've seen Kansas do with Brent Dearman against most of the rest of the conference? Is there any concern that, you know, that advantage that you might potentially have on the lines won't necessarily matter as much in this game? Are you kind of worried about the kind of things he might be able to take advantage of in terms of the weaknesses of the Kansas State defense? Or do you not really think it's going to make that much of a difference by that point?
Talking about that game last year, I mean, Kansas State really kind of surprised everyone with going with the option game on the ground. And Kansas certainly wasn't prepared for it. I wasn't expecting that at all. Overall, you know, K-State was the better team, but I give KU a lot of credit last year. I'm not just saying this to please you. They had a really good game versus Boston College. They hang around with Oklahoma. They almost beat Texas. And I said this on my podcast last year that I predicted Kansas to beat Kansas State. K-State was really cocky coming off. I believe that was the game after the Oklahoma game. And this was after, I know you're going to have to correct me here. Did KU beat Tech, correct, in Lawrence?
Correct.
Yeah, they did. So Kansas had all the momentum from what I remember going into that game. So I think Kansas is going to do a little better than people think. I don't think they're going to make a bowl game or anything like that, but they're going to be a little more competitive this year. Obviously, the biggest issue with them was the consistency last year. You have your really good games. You double up on Boston College and stuff like that. But, what was it? Coastal Carolina, you lose that home game to them. The consistency needs to be there for them.
A lot of that was the fact that, the Boston College game was essentially the Brent Dearman package that got used for the entire game. So it was completely different from anything that they had been doing up to that point in the season. The game against TCU, they had to deal with players leaving the team unexpectedly, right before the game actually happened. Like, they had a lot of stuff that happened that kept them from being consistent. And I think what we saw once Brent Dearman took over as the offensive coordinator, he was able to use what they already had implemented fairly well against Texas and Texas Tech because of the style of defense they played. Kansas State defense, I think, is completely different from pretty much what everyone else, except for maybe TCU, does in the conference. And so trying to use those packages and not being able to really fully game plan against that because you're still trying to implement your own system. Once your system's implemented, it's a lot easier to tweak what you do to handle the strengths and weaknesses of an opposing defense than it is to just we're still trying to make sure everybody understands what's going on with our system. And they ran into Kansas State last year. Kansas State had really the perfect setup to handle what Kansas was trying to implement and still trying to learn fully. And Kansas wasn't able to adjust. They didn't have the time to adjust. They didn't have the personnel to really just run something completely different at that point. And so it was kind of the perfect storm, I think, for Kansas State last year to really deal with Kansas as well as they did because of just kind of the details of and the specifics surrounding that transition there. I'm wondering now that Brent Dearman has a full year to really implement what he wants to do. And yeah, it's a little different because they're not able to really completely do that. And they're still trying to identify a quarterback from what I understand with no spring practice. It's definitely going to be difficult for them, but this is also far enough into the year. This will be the fourth game if our assumption about the schedule is true. So Kansas will have some time to get the kinks worked out, figure out what's working. They'll be able to game plan specifically against what Kansas State does. And so I think this is going to be a competitive game. I don't know that I'm willing to say that Kansas is going to go in and win it, but I think, I feel a lot better about this one in terms of their potential chances of winning this game. I think it's much more of a 60-40 type game as opposed to I thought last year it was probably two-thirds K-State, so 66-33. I think the odds are a little bit better for Kansas this year. But I also am not crazy enough to think that, they're going to come in and start lighting a bunch of people up. Like you said, I see the possibility for Kansas to potentially be a bowl team next year. But I don't think it's extremely likely that they actually will make it. I mean, I think 3-9 is much more likely than a 6-6 season.
Yeah, I think a lot of it depends just simply on the how many games you have. What's the bowl, the rules? You know, if there's only, what, like 10 games, what if you only have to win 4 games or something like that? So we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, I would assume you have to win at least 5, just like you normally do here. But you know, obviously we'll kind of figure that out as we go. All right, well, that will do it. We're actually out of time at this point. Any other final thoughts you want to leave us with about Kansas State before we get out of here?
That's about all I've got for you, man. Overall, I think, like I said, I think certainly Kansas, I wish you guys the best. I think you guys will have a pretty solid year, a little better than the expectations. But as for Kansas State, I think we talked about it, the false hope there. I think that 8-4 season's tricking a lot of people. I think they might take a little bit of a step back this season.
All right. So obviously over on the 10-12 podcast, you cover all of the teams in the Big 12, not just Kansas State. But for those that want to get more of your work, where can they find you online?
You could find me on Twitter at 10of12 podcast to stay up to date with everything going on around the Big 12. As for me, you can find me on Twitter at GPCRyanG. I'm working with GoPowerCat, the 24/7 Sports Network. I cover basketball recruiting. Certainly, if you want to stay up to date with K-State basketball recruiting, I don't know if you really want to if you're a KU fan, but hey, if you want to stay up to date with that, at GPCRyanG.
All right. Well, Ryan, thank you so much for joining us tonight or today. And thank you guys so much for listening. If you haven't already, go out wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, any of the other million apps that are out there. Right now you can search Rock Chalk Talk and you can subscribe to us there. We do have some changes coming to the podcast. I don't want to share the details of what that is, but definitely stay tuned for the next couple weeks here to kind of figure out what it is that we're actually doing here. But if you do have any comments for the podcast, any questions, suggestions, anything like that, you can contact me via email at rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com or on Twitter at rockchalkpod. Ryan, thanks again so much for joining us. And thank you guys so much for listening. We will catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.